in the book. And what I've tried to do today is to simplify it. And I hope it comes across okay. And so y'all are going to have to play the part of Dale this morning. You know, when I ask you what these things are, you need to tell me, okay, what Dale said they were. Because that's what we're going with. I agree with what Dale taught. I'm not teaching anything different than Dale taught. I'm just teaching it differently, I guess you might say. And so with that maybe confusing introduction, we'll try to move on here. And the first thing I want to do is just read the 17th chapter. And let me say this, too, before we begin, that, you know, I taught chapter 16 is or chapter 15 and 16, and I made mention then that the chapter break between chapter 15 and 16 is really unfortunate because it's really one unit. Well, the same thing is true here. That chapter 17 and 18 is one unit. Chapter 18 explains an awful lot about chapter 17. Nevertheless, let's read chapter 17 together. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sets on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her head, on her forehead, the name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. But the angel said to me, Why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. These also are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has yet to come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. And the beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth, and is one of the seven, and is going to perdition. The ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as king with the beast. Kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called chosen and faithful. Then he said to me, The waters which you saw, where the harlot sits, are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And the ten horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot and make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, and to give the kingdom give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. The woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So you see in the reading here, just of the chapter, that it keeps, you know, we're introduced to different personalities, if you will, and we are then told what they are and so forth, but they're scattered throughout. Well, what I've done is I went back and tried to group these all together and see if we can't understand this maybe a little bit clearer. First of all, we're introduced to this great harlot in verse 1. Verse 18, the last verse of the chapter, tells us that the great harlot is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. This is apocalyptic Babylon. And if you will, we're going to take the time to turn to these passages and read them. You know, this isn't the first time that we have been introduced to Babylon here in Revelation, the great city. Revelation chapter 14 and verse 8, he says, "There followed another angel saying, 'Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all the nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication.'" So the symbology parallels what we're reading here. Then as you turn to chapter 16, of course we just finished chapter 16 a little bit ago. Chapter 16 and verse 19. "And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath." So again, the symbols line up. Now let me say this, I might be getting ahead of myself here. I've debated with myself as to where to bring this in, but since we're here in chapter 16, we might as well just look at it. How did chapter 16 close? Very familiar theme. Whenever you talk about the book of Revelation, people talk about the Battle of Armageddon. Okay, the Battle of Armageddon. You see here that, you know, Babylon is brought into that, okay? And the way that I understand this is that chapter 17 and 18 is really showing us the preparation for the Battle of Armageddon. Chapter 18 is the Battle of Armageddon as far as, you know, Rome goes, you see? And the destruction of Rome. And I know that chapter 16 kind of closes out looking like the Battle of Armageddon's over. But that's not the first time that we've seen. Now, this is a pattern in Revelation, isn't it? We're shown something, then we're shown it again in more detail. And that's what's taking place here. Okay? So these are very familiar terms to us. Chapter 17 here, as we just looked at, verse 18, describing, of course, the great harlot as Babylon. And then especially as you come into chapter 18, verse 10, 16, 18, 19, and 21, very clearly it's Babylon once again. Now, we might be saying, well, why? Why Babylon? Well, we've explained that, haven't we? Babylon of old, you know, back in Nebuchadnezzar's time and its immorality and luxuriousness and so forth. And so it's using the symbol of that old Babylon as a symbol of how Rome was. Okay? Now, interestingly enough, if you'll turn back here to Jeremiah chapter 51, I find it very interesting myself that much of this terminology that here Jeremiah is prophesying against the fall of Babylon. Literal, physical Babylon. Okay? And a lot of the terminology that Jeremiah is using here about the fall of physical Babylonian Empire is being symbolically brought back up by the Lord here and given to John and to be recorded for us to study in regards to Rome as a type of Babylon. So if you come back here to Jeremiah chapter 51 and just read with me, "Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will raise up against Babylon and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me a destroying wind, and will send unto Babylon fanners that shall fan her and shall empty her land. For in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about, against him that bendeth at the archer, bend his bow, against him that lifts himself up in the brigandine. And spare ye not her young men, destroy ye utterly all her host. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in their streets. For Israel hath not been forsaken, for Judah of his God, of the Lord of hosts, though their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. Flee out of the midst of Babylon, and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. Babylon hath seen a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine. Therefore, the nations are mad. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her. Take balm for her pain. If so be, she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go every one into his own country, for her judgment reaches unto heaven, and is lifted up to the skies. The Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Come, and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. Make bright the arrows," meaning make bright with blood the arrows. "Gather the shields. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, and his device is against Babylon, to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple." And so we know that the Medo-Persian Empire overcame the Babylonian Empire. God raised up the Medo-Persian Empire. Okay? Well, That's of significance here in Revelation chapter 17. "Set up the standard upon the walls of Babylon. Make the watch strong. Set up the watchmen. Prepare the ambushes. For the Lord hath both devised and done that which he spake against the inhabitants of Babylon." So prepare for war, Babylon, because war is coming to you. Battle of Armageddon. Okay? I'm just saying that the Battle of Armageddon is like this. Jeremiah is saying to Babylon. Now look at verse 13. "O thou that dwells upon many waters, abundant in treasures, thine end is come, and the measure of thy covetousness." And we just continue to read here And especially as you come into chapter 18, you'll see the similarities. But you see the similarities in terminology here in Jeremiah. And I guess really the way to say it is that you see the similarities in Revelation 17 from Jeremiah. So he's using Babylon, he's using the judgment against the Babylonian Empire as a type. Rome is a type of Babylon, and the destruction of Rome as a type of the fall of the Babylonian Empire. Okay? And those types are repeated throughout Revelation chapter 17. Yeah.
And this is very important to these people here because they're under this persecution. They're under this common journey of
right.
Babylon, spiritual Babylon. Right. So
right.
And as they see it, it means a whole lot to them.
Right. Okay, so the harlot, verse 1 says, sits on many waters. Verse 2 says, the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And verse 8 said, those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. Then as we come down to verse 15, we're told that the many waters are the peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. And so, all of these are the same thing, and just explanation. She sits on many waters. Well, what are the many waters? Well, they're the inhabitants of the earth who are made drunk with the wine of the harlot's fornication. Now, what is the harlot's fornication? What's included in that? Well, we know that by the way she's dressed, right? Is she in common everyday clothes? No, they're very luxurious clothes, aren't they? They're the clothes of royalty and splendor, you know, scarlet and purple. She's wearing luxurious jewelry. She's comfortable. She has luxurious foods to eat, you know. And so you say, well, who wouldn't want to be her, right? And that's really what Revelation 17 is saying. Who wouldn't want to be her? You know, why? The whole world wants to be like that. The whole world wants to be rich and in comfort and has good food and everything. And so, you know, as Rome conquers, it also includes. That was part of the strategy of the Roman emperors, that they didn't conquer to beat into submission. They kind of conquered to beat to bring into inclusion. You remember that during the time of Jesus, and as the New Testament was being written, who was the king of Israel? Herod, and there were several different Herods. Okay, but they were all kings, you know, of Israel. Well, were they kings in the sense of that we think of an independent kingdom? No, they were vassal kings of Rome. Rome allowed not only Israel, but many of the territories that they conquered, they allowed those kings to stay in power as long as they didn't, you know, rise up any insurrection against Rome. You know, and that's what you have going on with the Jews and working on Pilate and so forth. You know, he makes himself a king. Jesus makes himself a king. And if you let this pass, then you're no friend of Caesar. And we're going to tell Caesar, you know, all that. That's what all of this was about. Okay. So the many waters are just the unregenerate people of the earth. You know, who they don't like being conquered by Rome, but at the same time, you know, unless you're a Jew, I mean, the Jews, you know, the reason the Jews hated being occupied by the Romans was because they considered themselves, an independent nation because God made them an independent nation. Nobody's supposed to rule over them but God, you know, so had a religious motivation for all of that. Everybody else, you know, they just kind of got with the program, with the Roman program. They said, well, we don't like being, you know, under Rome and paying taxes to Rome, but nobody likes paying taxes to anybody, do they? But at the same time, things got better. You know, you could travel throughout the Roman Empire and there was law and order and, things weren't all that bad for most people on the earth, you know, in the Roman Empire. And they enjoyed the prosperity that the Roman Empire brought to them. You see, so that's what all this is talking about. And then it talks about this great harlot also, verse 2, it says, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication. So that's what I'm talking about. Those vassal kings, you know, instead of rising up against Rome, well, how could they? You know, Rome and its power and overthrowing, and as the empire spread, they didn't have any power. So if you can't beat them, join them. You know, it's kind of, they offered for us to join them, so we'll join them. Because if I don't join them, they're probably going to kill me. So, you know, it's not so bad. Okay?
Is it safe to say that Rome at this particular time maybe represents the best that Satan can do with everything that he has as far as offering and appealing?
Yeah, it wasn't a bad deal. It wasn't a bad deal, you know. He doesn't have... He's not the final word, and he has to answer to people for what he does and all that kind of stuff. But he's still the king, and he's still got power, you know, and recognition and that type of thing. All right, so this continues. You know, we kind of the first couple of verses were introduced to Babylon. And the, go back to that. Babylon, the many waters, and the kings of the earth, okay? And then the angel says to him, I know you're wondering about this, okay? Now I'm going to explain it to you. And he takes him away. Where's he take him to? In the wilderness. Now what's the wilderness?
It's a deserted place.
Okay, it's an uninhabited place, right? And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, when God took someone into the wilderness, what happened? It was a special place. It was a place, a lot of times it was a place of instruction, a place of testing and so forth. It was a place to take you aside, you might say. Even the apostle, Saul, who became Paul, you know, that after he was in Damascus, he went to Arabia, and that's where the Lord taught him the gospel, you know, the fullness of the gospel. Then he returned to Damascus and went on with his ministry. And so we understand the symbol of this, the figure of this, okay? Come here, I want to teach you something. We're kind of going away from this, but at the same time, and all of this is around us, but at the same time I'm going to instruct you about this before I bring you back to it. And so he continues here. And in verse 3, the great harlot is just simply identified as a woman, but it's the same. The woman and the harlot is one and the same. And you know, if you wanted to say, well, who was the woman or what was the woman? Well, it's pleasure and luxury and carnally minded. And, you know, it's the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. You see, it's everything that appeals to the carnal mind and all of those enticements, you see. And we're subject to those things too, you know. It's attractive to us, okay? Carnally, it's attractive to us. We need to learn to rise above that. Okay. She's further described as arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls and having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the fullness of her fornication. Verse 4. Verse 5 says, on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of abominations of the earth. What's the purpose of having these names written on her forehead? What? You know, it's no different than everything else that we've seen. When something is written on their forehead, what's written on the forehead of Christians in Revelation? Right. The name of Christ. Okay? They're identified, his name is on their forehead. They're identified with Christ. What is on the forehead of the unregenerate? Okay, blasphemous name. 666. Yeah, always the number of man, never the number of deity. Doesn't rise to deity. Okay? It's always carnally minded, is not of a divine mind. Okay? And so this is just saying, who is she identified with? Okay, she's identified with Babylon the Great. Well, okay, it takes us right back to Jeremiah 51, doesn't it? And Babylon, and all of its fornication and immorality. Everybody kind of familiar with the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, the history of that, okay? The history of the Roman Empire and as it, came to its zenith and then in the time of its fall, all of the historians say, well, it fell because they lost their discipline. They lost their discipline because they were engaged in immorality and luxurious living, so forth. Okay, so you see what's going on here? Okay. She is drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Blood of the saints, blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Is that two different groups or is that the same group? It's the same group. It's the same group. He is attributing their death to her. Okay? You might say, well, that's more than just and certainly is, that's more than just immorality. I mean, physical Rome was doing that, right? They were putting Christians to death, and that's right, okay? But why were they doing it? Why was Rome putting Christians to death? Well, they bloodlust. They had a bloodlust. I mean, they didn't just put Christians to death, they put all kinds of animals to death. They put peasants to death. They put anybody they wanted to death. You've heard about the gladiators and so forth. What was that all about?
Games for Rome.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it was a game to the death. It was a fight to the death. I mean, you were taking some of your best warriors off of the battlefield, and Rome was kind of at. They were about as, they'd conquered as much as they really wanted to conquer, but they were still conquerors, okay? They would, in the Colosseum, they would flood the Colosseum and have naval battles in the Colosseum, They just love to watch people die. Yeah. Yeah.
It
is amazing.
And thousands of people that would die in these recreations.
Right. And the people would yell for more. It's just, it's beyond our comprehension. The woman is sitting on a scarlet beast, verse 3. Which was full of names of blasphemy. Okay? What is blasphemy? Blasphemy against who? Against God. Okay? So anything you could say against God, you would say it. Okay? That's what it's talking about. So this beast is full of names of blasphemy, and it has seven heads. So the seven heads, we're told, are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now, what did Dale say the seven mountains would bring to mind in the Christians of the first century?
Seven hills of Rome.
Okay, that Rome was built upon seven hills, okay, or seven mountains. So immediately their thoughts would go to Rome. And almost as immediately as our thoughts go to Rome, the angel says, we're not talking about just Rome, that she sets upon Rome. He says in verse 10, he says, these also are seven kings. Five are fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short time. Remember that. I didn't make a big deal about that in this outline, but this short time keeps coming back up over and over again. Or an hour, you know, is going to come up. So the seven mountains are the seven kings. That's really not a problem for us, is it? Because we understand that in apocalyptic language that mountains often depict governments. Okay? And so what would you have over a government? A ruler, okay? A king, okay? And so he's saying these are seven kings, okay? So then you get into this, okay, five have come, and or five are fallen, the other has not yet come, and all of that kind of stuff. And we try to say, well, what's that all about? And commentators will try to tell you what that's all about, and maybe they got it right, and maybe they didn't. I don't know, but it's always kind of interesting to me. I mean, I've got a pile of books on Revelation, okay? And they're all interesting to me, but the thing of it is that in order to try to make these numbers literal, they'll start at different points in history and with different emperors and all kinds of, you know, to kind of make things fit for them. And that's fine if they want to do that, but I'm like Dale. I don't think we need to be doing that. I think we just need to realize that what can you see by this right away? If there are seven, okay, what did Dale say about the seven? Complete, okay. Is he talking about a literal seven kings? No, he's talking about the completeness of the kings of the Roman Empire, the emperors of the Roman Empire, okay. So if five are fallen and one is and the other has not yet come, what does that tell you about where are we in the Roman Empire here in the history of the Roman Empire? We're getting close to the end, aren't we? Yeah. We're getting real close to the end. And that's what God wants the people of the first century to see. Okay? Look. Rome has gone on, but it's not going to go on and on. Okay, we're getting close to the end. Okay? And then he says there's 10 horns. The beast has 10 horns. 7 heads and 10 horns. And the 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings. Verse 12. That's where I was supposed to pick up today. Verse 12. Okay? So we have 7 kings, we have 10 kings. Are they the same kings? They're not the same kings. These are 10 different kings. Okay? These 10 kings have not received a kingdom as yet. Well, in the sense that he's talking about it, they haven't received their kingdom as yet. But the fact of the matter is that they had a kingdom and they lost it to Rome. They had a kingdom, they lost it to Rome, and now they're included in Rome. But the indication here is that their kingdom is going to come back. Okay, that's what he's talking about. Verse 12 also says, they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. Rome gave them their power. Didn't remove them from power? Well, some of them they removed from power and set others in power, but they're still kings. Okay? But Rome is giving them their authority. These are one mind. These are one mind. And that's interesting because in this particular verse, in verse 13, their one mind is we're going along with everything. In this verse, all of these kings, these vassal kings, we're going along with Rome, okay? This isn't so bad. We're participating in the luxury of Rome, okay? In the wealth of Rome. This isn't so bad, okay? Verse 13 again, and they will give their power and authority to the beast, right along with the vassal kings. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. Okay, so these vassal kings are in agreement with what Rome is doing to the Christians. They're not standing against, they're going along with it. Okay? Now, these will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. That reminds you of the Battle of Armageddon, doesn't it? In chapter 16. The kings of the earth are going to come and make battle against the people, God's people, and God's going to win. Okay, well, you see, so we're just looking at the same thing again, just more explanation. These will hate the harlot and make her desolate and naked and eat her flesh and turn her, burn her with fire. Verse 16. And so, he's saying the time is going to come. These vassal kings are going to say, we've had enough. We see a weak point. We see an opportunity that we can actually get back our kingdom. Historically, that's exactly what happened with the Roman Empire. You had the Germanic tribes and the others that were around, you know, that they rose up and took advantage of the weakened, undisciplined nature of the Roman Empire and brought it down. Verse 17 explains, God put it into their hearts to fulfill His purpose, to be of one mind, and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And so, who's behind this? Well, just as God was behind the rise of the Medo-Persian Empire, God was behind putting into the hearts of these vassal kings who saw an opportunity to get their kingdom back. So they took advantage of it. You know, it didn't just happen. It was all by the design of God, because justice needed to be served. Now, going back to the scarlet beast. Okay? Verse 8 says, it was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and will go into perdition. And then a little bit later in verse 8 it says, was and is not and yet is. And then in verse 11, was and is not is himself also the eighth. So the scarlet beast is the eighth king. You know, it's in agreement with the king, with these seven kings, and is of the seven and is going to perdition. Okay, so basically what's that saying to us? It's saying that the beast, what's the power behind the beast? Satan. Okay, so where it comes from, where's it going? That's where it's going. Okay, it's going right back. You know, to be with Satan in utter destruction. Perdition is utter destruction. Okay? It doesn't mean that they're destroyed to annihilation. It means they're taken away and they're never coming back. Okay? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially in Egypt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The importance of them at the time was all the money and the wealth and the conquering land and conquering peoples and the destruction and ungodliness. And God says.
Yeah. And that's what chapter 18 is about. You know, that chapter 18 is about, you know, how if the people of the earth wonder and say, how is Rome fallen? You know, how is it all this wealth and everything? How can it just all of a sudden be gone? You see? And so, read ahead. Chapter 18 is easier to understand. I mean, did this help you with chapter 17? This helped me with chapter 17. It helped me to understand things, to kind of categorize all of these things together. And so, basically, you know, if you keep in mind world history here and what happens with Rome. After Rome, what period do we go into in world history? The Dark Ages. Now read chapter 18. Read chapter 18. Is that not a destruction of the Dark Ages? Okay. All right. So we'll pick up chapter 18 Wednesday night.